Welcome to this week's edition of Far West Texas. Readings from the Big Bend Sentinel, the Monahans News, and the Fort Stockton Pioneer, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Big Bend Sentinel for Thursday, September 2nd, 2021. No mask requirement for Marfa ISD. Presidio ISD recalls its mandate. By Sachi McClendon, SACHI at BigBendSentinel.com. Presidio County. In a meeting last Thursday, the Marfa Independent School District Board decided to not go through with a mask mandate on campus. There is a caveat, though. If the school shuts down from a COVID outbreak, then Superintendent Asco Aguero has the authority to temporarily require masks once school returns in person. While much of the discussion on whether to implement a mask mandate was held in a closed session with the school district's attorney, Aguero said in an interview on Monday, "We want to plan in case an outbreak happens. I now have the authority to require a mask. As it stands right now, there are no active cases on campus and no student or staff is quarantining. So far, around 30 students have taken COVID tests, but all have come back negative." In the meeting last week, Aguero did say that students in the lower grades have been wearing their masks at a higher rate than the upper grades. Then, on Tuesday, the Marfa School Board held another meeting where the members slightly adjusted the district's COVID protocols. Unlike last year, MISD is not providing online learning, so if there is a COVID outbreak, class will be canceled rather than move online. According to the school's most recent COVID guidance handbook, school will only be canceled once there are 7 confirmed cases on campus. In-person instruction will resume after 2 instructional days, the handbook reads. And if there are 11 or more positive cases, all in-person instruction will be canceled for 1 week. If there are between 1 and 6 positive cases, then in-person instruction continues. Limited student group activities, no common assemblies in closed areas smaller than gymnasium, the handbook reads. We're not allowed to do remote instruction anymore. That's the biggest thing, Aguero said. It's not funded through the Texas Education Agency. Down in South County, Presidio Independent School District rescinded its mask mandate last week after the Texas Supreme Court backed Governor Greg Abbott's executive order that bans all governmental entities from implementing any sort of mask requirement. Earlier in August, soon after the Texas Education Association said it would stop enforcing Abbott's executive order, PISD officials announced that all staff, students, and visitors will be required to wear masks while on district property. Facial coverings will be part of our district dress code. We had this mask mandate in place all last year, and our students and staff did a great job of wearing masks. We hope that everyone understands the importance of wearing masks in indoor facilities, Presidio ISD Superintendent Ray Vasquez said in an email. Yet, barely a week after PISD imposed this order, it reversed course after the Texas Supreme Court struck down a mask mandate at San Antonio ISD, siding with Governor Abbott's executive order. Starting tomorrow, we will no longer require facial coverings in our district. We will still strongly encourage everyone to wear masks in the district. This decision was not made by Presidio ISD, the district police said on August 26th in a statement on Facebook. Despite this reversal, positive cases are popping up on campus. As of September 1st, there have been a total of 16 COVID cases at PISD. We will continue to make every effort to keep our students safe. Make no mistake, students and staff are encouraged to continue wearing masks, especially after a rise in positive cases, the district police said. And all over the Tri-County, the number of positive cases has slowly been ticking up. As of Wednesday, there are an estimated 17 active cases in Presidio County and an estimated 23 in Brewster County. In a statement earlier in August, County Judge Cinderella Guevara pushed for masks in schools, saying, CDC officials also called for universal masking of teachers, staff, students, and visitors in schools, regardless of vaccination status and community transmission of the virus. At the time, she noted the cases were beginning to rise throughout the region. With many of these legal battles between school districts and the state still being waged, Superintendent Vasquez said it's been a challenge navigating the ever-changing COVID protocols. But we have a great staff here in PISD, and we will make the necessary changes, adjustments needed to provide our students the best education possible while maintaining a safe learning environment for all, he said. With BBRMC regularly on diversion, Fort Stockton Hospital no longer admitting obstetrics patients from Tri-County, complicating access to care. By Sachi McClendon, SACHI at BigBenSentinel.com. Far West Texas, in early July, the labor and delivery ward at the Big Bend Regional Medical Center began intermittently shutting down for days on end due to a nursing shortage. And over the past 2 months, six obstetrics patients were directed to other facilities, mainly Pecos County Memorial Hospital in Fort Stockton. However, PCMH in Fort Stockton will now no longer accept obstetrics patients outside of Pecos County, as the hospital is facing a surge in COVID hospitalizations as the Delta variant of the virus has swept all throughout the state. Over the weekend, PCMH reported that they have 20 patients, 16 with COVID, leaving only 5 beds available at the hospital. Betsy Briscoe, the CEO of PCMH, said, "This second wave of COVID has hit harder and faster in the area than the first. Many hospitals are on diversion, including the larger hospitals where we send our patients for higher levels of care. As such, we are forced to provide that care in our own facilities." Melinda Richardson, the EMS director for Presidio, said her crew has had to transport 2 obstetrics patients to Fort Stockton, a 2.5-hour drive, since BBRMC began shutting down, also known as being on diversion, 2 months ago. Richardson received word last Thursday that PCMH would no longer be accepting her obstetrics transports, and she has since been scrambling to figure out where to take them. "So if we get an OB, obstetrics patient, I don't know who would take them right now. Odessa Midland, we are going to be out of service for 12 hours, Richardson told the Big Bend Sentinel last week. There's also the issue of whether the hospitals in Odessa Midland would be able to take these obstetrics patients from the Tri-County area. Midland Memorial Hospital did not respond to questions by print time, however. It has been seeing a huge surge in hospitalizations and attendant staffing shortages, as Marfa Public Radio previously reported. Richardson also considered taking her obstetrics transports to Culberson Hospital in Van Horn, about 130 miles away from Presidio. However, according to Chief Nursing Officer Yolanda Jurado, Culberson Hospital doesn't have a labor and delivery unit. We don't do labor and delivery here. If a patient comes here to the ER, they get transferred to El Paso, Jurado said. Ruth Huck, the spokesperson for BBRMC, said, currently, Del Sol Medical Center and Las Palmas Medical Center in El Paso are accepting transfer patients in need of labor and delivery care. When our hospital is on diversion for elective obstetrics patients, we communicate in advance with nearby emergency transport services and acute care providers to make certain there is a continuity of care. And while BBRMC lets area EMS services know the labor and delivery unit is on diversion, the hospital does not alert the public, and nowhere on its website can a potential patient find such information. On Monday, Richardson said that as it stands now, if she gets an obstetrics call while BBRMC is closed, her first plan is to call First Flight, an air ambulance company, to fly the patient to whichever hospital will admit them. If First Flight is not able to do that, we would go ahead and take them to Big Bend Regional Medical Center, and en route we would advise the ER and they would arrange a flight for the patient, Richardson said. To make matters worse, Presidio only has one working ambulance at the moment. The town's newest ambulance, which has well over 100,000 miles on it, has been having issues with its engine and is currently getting repaired. We had troubles with it several years ago, but it's now at the point where it's got to go in for service. I mean, it's got to, Richardson said. According to the Fort Stockton dealer, it could be as much as 2 months to get the ambulance available. As the Big Bend Sentinel previously reported, BBRMC began reducing its labor and delivery room hours as there is a shortage of nurses trained to deliver babies at the hospital. Huck previously told the Big Bend Sentinel, I can confirm that we, like other health care providers across the country, are facing challenges filling much-needed nursing positions. Huck added that the staffing issues at the hospital began escalating at the beginning of July. Until we have additional labor and delivery providers, we may be forced to utilize diversion status. Again, out of an abundance of caution and in a commitment to patient safety, we cannot provide care without the proper level of staffing, Huck said. BBRMC says it is actively addressing this nursing shortage and that it will soon have more nurses staffed in the labor and delivery wing. We expect to have additional staff starting in September. We are hopeful that with these additional nurses, we can limit the number of days on diversion. We also have one permanent OBGYN registered nurse starting soon, Huck said. To return to 24/7, 365, we need an additional 7 to 8 more employees. Mayor Baeza introduces 2021-2022 Marfa City Budget Proposal by Abby Perot, ABBIE at BigBendSentinel.com. Marfa. Marfa Mayor Manny Baeza proposed the 2021-2022 city budget on Tuesday. After a belt-tightening budget in 2020, the mayor proposed a budget that forecasted higher sales tax and hotel occupancy tax revenues and addressed various city properties, including the Marfa and Presidio County Museum building, the swimming pool, city vehicles and equipment that have deteriorated in recent years. Overall, the budget estimated $6,909,041 in revenue and $8,560,513 in expenses, relying on $1,652,500 from the city's previously banked funds to make up the difference. To advance through the budget process, the council scheduled budget workshops for Thursday, September 9th at 6 p.m. and Wednesday, September 15th at 6 p.m. The workshops will open the floor to the public to give feedback on the budget proposal, and council members will weigh in and make any changes they see as necessary. The council must pass a final budget by September 30th, along with a tax rate that supports the fiscal plan. BISA has been responsible for proposing city budgets since 2019, when he first stepped into the role of mayor. In 2019, he presented a narrowly balanced budget, calling on council to find more revenue or more cuts to the proposal. The following year was even tougher, as the city was 5 months into the pandemic, with the breadth of its impacts on the city revenues still unpredictable. The mayor and council tightened the budget down in response. This year's budget proposal meeting started on a positive note, as the mayor shared that sales tax revenue in 2020 exceeded all expectations, even under the pressures of the pandemic. In 2020, they made over $257,000, and for 2021, the mayor forecast growth to $342,000 in sales tax revenues to the general fund. Marfa Police Department. Under the mayor's proposal, the city would begin leasing vehicles for the Marfa Police Department, retiring and selling off the current fleet of civilian-grade cars that were retrofitted as police vehicles. While the vehicles were affordable when the police force was reconstituted in 2017, Marfa Police Chief Steve Marquez said the car's retrofitting is blowing out the alternators, killing the car batteries, and the turbo is going out on them. If we replace all of them, we'd go with 5 vehicles, but we're talking about 3 to 4. That's up to council, Marquez said. The cost for leasing 4 vehicles is $55,000 annually for 5 years. At the end of the 5 years, they would be ours, BISA explained. Councilmember Eddie Payares said replacing them all at the same time could lead to the cars aging and failing around the same time, which would bring bigger lump costs. Instead, he suggested replacing 2 or 3 in the coming year and then replacing the others later. If we stagger the vehicles, we'd have a better fleet, he said. Marfa Activity Center and Nutrition Center. Nutrition Center Director Ed Cobos' request from last year to add a second full-time employee was heard, and BISA added it to the 2021-2022 budget proposal. Growth in revenues and the client list for the center's meals program for Marfa elders drove the mayor to push for an expansion in staffing. In the other half of the MAC building, the faltering swimming pool was unable to open this year due to needed repairs and maintenance. Councilmember Buck Johnston has taken the lead on efforts to restore or replace the swimming pool, and Mayor BISA took her recommendation of adding $14,000 in professional services to get a feasibility study on the city pool. The cost of the study would be double that, but Johnston is hoping her fellow Parks and Recreation Board members will commit to paying the other half of the cost. The study would talk to stakeholders, look at the MAC facility, give 3 different ideas of how the pool could be corrected, and, crucially, be a document that could help the city secure grant funding to repair or replace the pool. It will tell us whether to shut down that pool and start a new one or fix it, said BISA. Dan Dunlap, a former city mayor who contracts with the city for accounting services, and also helps out with pool maintenance, updated the city on the recent effort to check the condition of the pool. Dunlap said the pool was running great, citing minimal leaking and a smoothly operating pump. It's run a week nonstop. It doesn't trip out anymore. Unfortunately, he said, the solar panels that heat the pool are still leaking. That's probably one thing that needs to be redone, Dunlap said. The restroom facilities also have been a long-standing issue, which Councilmember Payares brought up as another cost that would come if the pool is restored for public use. Fire station. For years, the city has allocated funds to a facility upgrade at the Marfa Fire Station, but work has been slow to progress since plans have been drawn up on a volunteer basis. BISA proposed rolling over the unspent $82,500 from previous years, but councilmember and volunteer firefighter Yosef Ben Yehuda remarked that funding would need to be well over that to actually see the project through. He asked the council to consider adding $40,000 more, something that will be discussed at a future budget workshop this month. $10,000 of donations after the Judd fire have been put toward the building improvement, said Ben Yehuda. Since the city-owned building might be considered historic, the mayor mused, it could potentially be paid for partially with hotel occupancy tax funds. Hotel occupancy tax fund. The city's tax revenues from hotel and short-term rental occupancies have continued to balloon in the past year. Despite the council's modest budgeting of only $400,000 expected during the 2020 fiscal year because of the pandemic, defying those expectations, the city has brought in nearly $710,000 this fiscal year. Marfa never slowed down in the pandemic, Baiza remarked. With $700,000 budgeted for the new fiscal year, Baiza's plan is to spend the bulk of the money on historical preservation, slotting $221,620.11 into that line item. The city owns the building that houses the Marfa and Presidio County Museum, and Baiza said that the facility is at risk of deteriorating beyond repair due to two small gutters that have channeled water against an exterior wall and the foundation. Mayor, you're right, said Councilmember Raul Lara. Let's finally fix that museum once and for all. 2 years ago, the city had allocated $50,000 to repair the eastern wall of the structure, but the limestone plaster has since crumbled as water damaged continued to pelt the building. We've got to do it because Britt Webb wanted it done too, said Irma Salgado, referencing the late council member she served with years ago. The first thing we need to do is stabilize the building. Other capital outlays that could use hot funds included a new ramp at the USO's side entrance, bathrooms at the Garden Pavilion next to the USO, and a carport for the city's rental car fleet. City vehicles. Many departments received allocations to update the aging fleet of city vehicles. City Roads Supervisor Albert Dominguez explained that $50,000 of his department's capital outlay budget would go toward replacing a vehicle that shuts off when it idles too long at a stop sign and can't reliably drive long distances. His department also requested $100,000 for a Bobcat with all the attachments to carry out road repairs. While in support of it, Councilmember Ben Yehuda also wanted to hear a more detailed plan of how the equipment would be used, and Johnston asked that it be on a maintenance plan if purchased. The gas department also asked for $55,000 toward a pickup truck. "Everyone's getting a pickup this year," Laura said. "We needed to update our fleet." One of the largest expenses in outlay was $375,000 for an ambulance in the EMS department. Though EMS Director Bird Lagarde explained at least part of that could potentially be subsidized by a grant. City staff pay. Finally, Biza said there would be a deeper look into the salaries and hourly pays of city staff at a budget workshop. In a brief explanation, he proposed a 3% cost of living increase for all non-salaried employees of the city. He also budgeted higher pay for some hourly workers in the gas, water, and sewer departments, offering them an opportunity to see raises if they received certain licenses and training throughout the year. There's money in the pot. If an employee is at $15 an hour, if they do pass their trainings, they'll be able to get a raise instead of just having them think there's no room for advancement, Biza said, with Councilmember Salgado adding, "and that we retain them," hoping higher pay would reduce turnover among the departments. Setting the tax rate. Presidio County Tax Assessor Collector Natalia Williams also presented the various tax rates the City Council would be able to approve this year, from one that would generate no new revenue to one that would go for the maximum percent increase allowed without opening the city up to the potential of residents petitioning for its lowering anywhere above 3.5%. The no new revenue tax rate is 0.364501 cents per $100 of value, while the voter approval tax rate is actually slightly lower at 0.362749 cents per $100. The percent increase from no new revenue to the proposed tax rate is minus 0.48% because of reduced debt load, explained Dunlap. This year, the mayor is proposing the city go to the 3.5% increase to the maintenance and operations rate, which Dunlap explained would raise minus $1,931.24 in additional taxes. "You're not increasing the tax rate," he told council, should they go with the mayor's proposal. Property taxes at the 3.5% voter approval rate in 2021-2022 would raise $287,978, according to the mayor. On September 9th, the council will meet to pass the proposed tax rate, and on September 14th, there will be a public hearing for the tax rate at 5:30 p.m. for residents to ask questions or weigh in. The tax rate will be adopted later this month after the final budget has been passed.
Hello, this is Cindy reading the Fort Stockton Pioneer for Thursday, August 26th. COVID active cases continue steady rise, by Nathan Hewer. The number of confirmed active COVID-19 cases in Pecos County has seen a steady increase since July 28th, and that trend has continued to get steeper in the past week. There were 30 new positive tests results reported since August 19th, and that total has increased the number of confirmed active cases in the county to 33. The active case number currently is 8 higher than a week ago. Pecos County Emergency Management Coordinator Jesse Dominguez reported on August 24th that there were an additional 37 active probable cases on the east end of the county, which were tested at Ira Ann General Hospital. The cases are considered probable because an antigen test was given but not a more accurate PCR test. The numbers are categorized accordingly due to DSHS guidelines. the 33 confirmed active cases and 37 probable active cases as of August 24th would put Pecos County in its highest since January 12th if all the 37 tests done at Ira Ann General Hospital were accurate. Pecos County Memorial Hospital CEO Betsy Briscoe reported on August 24th that there were 8 COVID positive patients hospitalized at their facility. While none were in critical condition, Briscoe said that a few were close to that status. Briscoe added that a death occurred at PCMH due to COVID-19 complications on August 18th, but the patient who passed away was an out-of-state resident. Vaccine rates increased. Unvaccinated make up majority of new cases. A vaccine controversy continues to stir throughout the country, and mandates continue to be imposed with certain entities. Vaccination numbers in Pecos County and the United States continue to show that unvaccinated individuals largely make up the new COVID-19 cases. In Pecos County, there have been 89 individuals that have tested positive for COVID-19 and have been vaccine eligible since the recent spike started on July 28th. Of those 89 people, 75 were not vaccinated and 14 were. The totals coincide with hospitalizations that were unvaccinated and vaccinated. Since the recent spike began, there has been 16 people hospitalized at PCMH, according to Briscoe, and on those 16, only 2 had 1 shot of a COVID-19 and none were fully vaccinated. Vaccination totals in Pecos County have seen a slow increase in the past few weeks, as 65% of Pecos County residents that are ages 12 and older have received at least 1 vaccine, while 52% are fully vaccinated. City Council maintains food truck ordinance by Nathan Hewer. The 11 mobile food vendors that operate within Fort Stockton city limits currently and the customers who enjoy them had much reason to rejoice following the Fort Stockton City Council meeting on August 24th. The City Council voted against, via a 3-2 vote, an ordinance amendment that would have raised their cost to operate within city limits from $1,400 a year to $3,600 a year. Councilwoman Pam Pilaleo and Councilman Paul Cassius and James Warnock voted against the amendment, while Councilmen Reuben Falcon and Darren Hodges were in favor of the price increase. Fort Stockton City Manager Frank Rodriguez presented information at the meeting for what nearby cities charge for their food vendors annually. When you look at other cities, Pecos, their mobile food vendors are $300 per month or $3,000 per year on leased land, $200 per month on owned land, or $2,000 per year on owned land. Monahans, there is no charge, just a background check. Midland charges $100 per year plus a fire permit of $125 plus a health permit of $175, totaling $400 a year. Odessa is $150 a year plus fire permit, health permit, totaling $475 a year. So you can see there is no consistency from other cities, Rodriguez said. Falcon and Hodges both explained that the ordinance would level the playing field between restaurants and mobile food vendors because food trucks do not pay property taxes or utilities for their business. The restaurant owners have been asking me for equal treatment. For example, our average restaurants pay about $800 per month for utilities, trash, etc. The mobile food vendors are taking advantage of the city lights and they're paying $3 a day. So when you're talking your local restaurant owners, they're paying property taxes and utilities, Falcon said. Hodges thought the increase from $3 a day to $9 a day was reasonable. I think we do need to level the playing field, and I don't think that's an outrageous fee. They're making good money, and $9 a day isn't a lot. Palaleo responded by explaining that mobile food vendors use generators or power from a business who pays the city for their utilities. Thus, vendors have to pay for their power when they purchase a generator or via an agreement they have in place with the landowners that they have their food truck on. Don't they usually have generators that operate their truck and they pay for that, right? That's how it works unless they have a deal with the owner of the property they're on, Palileo said. Last year when we cut utilities in half, they didn't see any kind of return because they don't use utilities for their business. Personally, I don't think it's fair. I just think with them running off a generator and them having a deal with the landowner, that's their deal. That landowner pays the dumpster fee. That's their deal, not ours. Cassius asked for clarification on the purpose of raising the ordinance fee before the conversation concluded and a motion was made. I want to make sure I know what it is I'm going to have to decide here. Our issue, or someone's issue, is that the city is not making money off these vendors. They're not paying water, electricity, so they are setting up on someone's established business. Fort Stockton Mayor Chris Alexander responded by stating the city does not profit from electricity. Rodriguez added that out of the 11 food trucks that operate in Fort Stockton city limits, 10 of the people who own and run them are from Fort Stockton. Business Spotlight. Piano Bar and Dance Venue Heading to Downtown Fort Stockton by Megan Waring. Bringing a unique venue to Fort Stockton that will attract tourism and retain residents is at the top of local attorney Albert Valadez's to-do list. Valadez is working to transform the building that formerly housed the police department along Main Street. The establishment is slated to have a piano bar lounge on the first floor and room to expand the second floor into a dance floor with a DJ. I was just driving by one day and thought, wow, what a great location for another establishment, Valadez said. The building itself is appealing. It's got a Roman style with the columns. I like the design, and it's a fortress of a building. Choosing the prime location for the Centennial Bar Lounge was vital for Valadez, and downtown Fort Stockton seemed like the perfect place. At the time I decided to go forward with this, I knew that the Springhurst Hotel approached the city, Valdez said. I thought, well, what a compliment. People from out of town would stay at the Springhurst and find themselves in a location where they can just walk up the street and be entertained by some music, cocktails, and walk back to their room. The former 83rd District Attorney is looking to fill the lounge with a similar ambiance to the Gray Mule Saloon, where it's a quiet atmosphere so conversations can still be heard with music playing in the background. There will be a self-player piano programmed with at least 400 songs, with the capability for talented musicians to play the instrument as well. DJ music is set to be played on the second floor on Thursdays, Fridays, and Saturdays, and live talent will be welcomed on some weekends to a dancing crowd. A variety of mixed drinks, wine, cocktails, and beer will be served with a choice of various flavors. Valadez's alcohol permit request was approved by City Council back in June, a requirement since the business will be within 300 feet of a church, daycare, and prayer location. To maintain Fire Code and Americans with Disabilities Act, ADA, compliance, Valadez had to move the opening date from late September towards the end of the year. I have a very capable contractor, but we found ourselves in a situation with a building that is over 100 years old, Valadez said.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Monahans News for Thursday, August 26th. Ramirez booked for break-in and attacking homeowner. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. A Grand Falls man is being held in Ward County Jail on a $50,000 bond after he broke into a home in Grand Falls and chased the homeowner with a hammer. Ray Alvaro Ramirez of 308 Avenue F in Grand Falls was booked on charges of burglary of a habitation, a first-degree felony. According to Ward County Sheriff Frerin Valle, quote, dispatch received a call around 8:54 p.m. on August 12th regarding a burglary in progress. When officers arrived, they learned the suspect, later identified as Ramirez, broke into a home located in the 300 block of Avenue E in Grand Falls. The homeowner was home at the time of the attempted robbery, and after he broke into the home, he chased the homeowner out of the house with a hammer, Valle said. The victim was later able to get back inside his home and called 911. Ramirez was subsequently identified through the victim and arrested. The offense can be punishable by imprisonment in the Texas Department of Criminal Justice for any term of 5 to 99 years or life and a fine not to exceed $10,000. Ramirez remains in custody in lieu of posting his bond. Three sent to prison on multiple charges. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. 143rd Judicial District Judge Mike Swanson handed down three prison sentences last week on charges of engaging in organized criminal activity and two charges of driving while intoxicated, third offense or more. Jose Alberto Garcia, age 32, of 305 North Dwight Street, was sentenced to 8 years confinement in the Institution Division of the Texas Department of Criminal Justice after waiving his right to a jury trial and accepting a plea deal on a charge of engaging in organized criminal activity, a first-degree felony. According to the indictment on March 20, 2019, Garcia, along with John Neighbors and Timothy Bell, did knowingly collaborate in carrying on criminal activity by stealing tools and other equipment at a value of more than $150,000, but less than $300,000. Robert Mendoza, age 57, of Pecos, was sentenced to 15 years confinement in the Institutional Division of the Texas Department of Criminal Justice after he accepted a plea agreement and pled guilty to a charge of driving while intoxicated, third offense habitual, a third-degree felony enhanced. According to the indictment, on October 7, 2020, Mendoza did knowingly operate a vehicle in a public place while intoxicated. Mendoza had three other previous convictions for driving while intoxicated in Reeves and Pecos counties in 2009, 2014, 2015. Mendoza was also given credit to 314 days credit to his sentence. In the third case, Kent Isaac Ford, age 39, of Wink, also accepted a plea deal and pled guilty to driving while intoxicated, third offense, a third-degree felony enhanced to second degree. He was sentenced to 8 years confinement in the Institutional Division of the Texas Department of Criminal Justice. Ford was arrested on his fourth DWI charge on November 2, 2020, and according to the indictment, Ford did knowingly operate a vehicle in a public place while intoxicated. His three previous convictions were in 2007, 2008, and 2014 in Andrews, Midland, and Winkler counties. Attorneys for the state on all three cases were 143rd District Attorney Randall W. Reynolds. All three judgments were handed down on August 17th. COVID cases still up. The number of active COVID-19 cases in Ward County continues its steep increase over the past week. The number of active cases is now 110, almost double from a week ago. No new deaths related to COVID have been recorded, remaining at 24. Active case count had increased to 69 by last Wednesday from 50 last Monday. The DSHS website reported on Wednesday morning a total of 862 active cases and 531 probable cases. no other information was available. County Judge Craig Holly said on Monday, quote, Ward County, 110 active cases, 852 confirmed, 530 probable, 1,248 recoveries, 24 deaths. Texas, 250,000 active cases, 2,909,355 confirmed cases, 535,828 probable cases, 53,994 deaths. U.S., 37,583,545 total cases, 625,375 deaths. Quote, active cases in Ward County represent about 1% of the county's population. About 12% of the population has tested positive for or been determined to probably have the virus at one time or another. Our local medical folks have confirmed that the Delta variant is indeed what we're seeing. We sent samples to a Lubbock lab for this information. Our regional hospitals remain at capacity levels, with Odessa and Midland still on diversion. Locally, we have 11 patients in Ward Memorial, with 10 of those having COVID-19. Transfers are becoming more difficult, with larger hospitals filled to capacity. This second wave has been much more taxing on our hospitals and healthcare providers than the first. We've requested from FEMA 4 additional nurses and 4 respiratory therapists. So far, we've received 2 respiratory therapists and expect to receive 2 nurses this week. End quote. Effective tax rate up 6%. The story was written by Paul Cyphers. A tax increase and the budget for the upcoming fiscal year were both approved when the Monahan City Council met in regular session on Tuesday afternoon. Although the ad valorem tax rate remains the same as the current year at 35 cents per $100, an increase in property values will increase the overall property tax collected. The total property valuation increased from $414 million to $445 million, which will produce a tax levy of $1,560,968 compared to $1,451,000 for the current year. The effective tax rate will be an increase of about 6.6%. A home valued at $100,000 will see a tax increase of about $21.66. Prior to the unanimous vote by the council, there were no comments in the public hearing for comments regarding the proposed property tax increase. Councilmen present were Calvin Carroll, Richard Hawkins, Jeppy Wilson, and Ivy Valenzuela. Councilman Rudy Hernandez was not present. Mayor Adam Steen and City Manager Rex Thee, along with City Attorney Alan Nicholas, were also present. A budget for the fiscal year of October 1, 2021 to September 31, 2022 was approved. The total budget is $10,833,000. For the general fund budget revenue, of which $1.5 million is derived from ad valorem tax, is $5.9 million. The system fund revenue, primarily from sanitation, water, and sewer billings, is $4.8 million. Expected expenditures for the general fund are $6.4 million. The largest budgeted expenditures are salary, $4 million, contractual, $621,000, maintenance structures, $488,000, maintenance equipment, $160,000, capital outlay, $500,000, and capital equipment, $332,000. Budgeted expenditures for the System Fund were stated at $4 million. The largest budgeted expenditures are water and wastewater disposal, $1.6 million, and solid waste collection and disposal, $1.1 million. In other actions, the budget for the Ward County and Winkler County appraisal districts were approved. The Ward County budget is $747,000, and the Winkler County budget is $451,000. The city has incorporated the Hog Ranch Water District in Winkler County, making it necessary for Winkler County to publish their budget locally. The publicity and tourism contracts with the Monahans Chamber of Commerce and Ward County were approved by the council. The Chamber of Commerce will receive up to $161,000, and Ward County will receive up to $50,000 for the Ward County Museum Complex and $418,000 for the Ward County Event Center. An agreement with Texas New Mexico Power for rebuilding an existing transmission line, construction of new transmission line, and related facilities was approved for a total of 5.5 miles. The proposed area is near the Monahans Solid Waste Disposal Landfill area, and the city will receive a sum of $114,000 for providing the easements. City Manager Rex Thee said, quote, "We will be allowed to conduct solid waste activities under their towers. The easement will be along the east side of the landfill and on the north side and west toward Wicket across the corner of the city property, which is designated as future expansion of the landfill." End quote. Monahans Economic Development Corporation Director Ashley Adalto presented the annual report to the council. The report highlighted accomplishments for the past year and projects that are currently underway, including new retail business and new home construction. Appointments to the Monahans Housing Authority Board were approved unanimously. New appointees are Chad Smith, Stacy Tapp, Joel Greiner, and Cindy Fuentes. David Huertas, on behalf of the Ward County Memorial Hospital, requested closure of 5th Street between South Allen and South Calvin on October 30th for a Halloween bash from 7 a.m. until noon. Quote, "This is actually another farmer's market that we are renaming. Mandujano Brothers will be there with pumpkins, and there will be photo opportunities for kids, and candy will be handed out to kids," Huerta said. The request was approved. In other actions, the council appointed Mayor Steen as their nominee to the Ward County Appraisal District for the years 2022 and 2023. 5 directors will be elected. The City of Monahans has 92 votes. Ward County has 1,204 votes. MWPISD has 2,647 votes. Pecos Barstow Toya ISD had 892 votes. City of Wicket has 3 votes. And City of Grand Falls has 1 vote. In routine business, minutes of the August 10th meeting were approved. During the agenda item for citizens to be heard, Monahans Police Chief Billy Riley told the council that the school crossings will be installed at the lights on Stockton Boulevard at 12th Street and Stockton Boulevard at 15th Street. Commissioners approved $32 million budget. The story was written by Paul Cyphers. With no public comment during the public hearing for the 2022 Ward County budget, the commissioners unanimously approved the $30 million budget from ad valorem tax and a total budget of $32 million. The budget is based on an approved ad valorem tax rate of 69 cents per $100 of valuation, also approved by the commissioners, and income from all sources. based on an overall property valuation of $4.5 billion, the general fund will be based on a tax rate of 57 cents, the road and bridge fund will be based on a tax rate of 4 cents, and the farm-to-market fund will be based on a tax rate of 7 cents. The budget is comprised of three funds, the general fund, $25 million, road and bridge fund, $1.8 million, and the farm-to-market fund, $3.2 million, for a total of $30 million from ad valorem taxes. In addition to the $25 million revenue produced by the ad valorem tax rate, the total budgeted income from all sources for the general fund is expected to be $26.9 million. Ad valorem tax for the road and bridge fund and all other revenue is expected to produce $2.2 million. Total revenue for the farm-to-market fund, including the ad valorem tax, is expected to be $3.2 million. Expected expenses for the general fund are $26.8 million, leaving a budget surplus of $91,000. Expected expense for the road and bridge fund are $2.2 million, leaving a budget surplus of $9,000. Expected expense for the farm-to-market fund are $3.2 million, leaving a budget surplus of $6,000. The full budget, a 106-page document, is available for public review at the county clerk's office or on the Ward County's website. Some of the budget highlights include a 5% salary increase for county employees and elected officials. Two new deputies and two new jailers will be hired for the Sheriff's Department. Precincts 1, 3, and 4 each receive $1 million each for road maintenance. Precinct 2 is within the city limits, so there are no county roads. The budget also allocates money for a four-year project for four ballparks, $500,000 per park per year, and to begin development of a new park just north of the Ward County Event Center. Commissioners present for the meeting were Tino Sanchez, Larry Hanna, Dexter Nichols, and Eddie Nelms. County Judge Greg Holly was also in attendance at Monday's meeting. Ward County received three bids for the CTIF 2020 seal coat bid. The county had been awarded a matching grant of $5 million from the County Transportation Infrastructure Fund, with the county to match $1 million. The low bid was from C.K. Newberry, LLC of Kennedy, Texas, totaling $4.5 million, leaving a balance of $702,000 remaining that could be bid out separately or add them to the contract with Newberry, as a letter from Savannah Batten, TIF project manager, stated. The other bids were from Ronald R. Wagner Company, LP, for $5.8 million and Cox Paving of Texas in the amount of $5.4 million. Commissioner Sanchez expressed concerns with Newberry, citing communication issues. Nelm said, quote, "I will personally oversee the projects so there won't be any problems," end quote. Despite the concerns, the Newberry bid was approved unanimously. A total of 113 roads are included in the bids, covering about 140 miles of roadways across the county. In other business, the commissioners approved the contracts for secure and not secure placement of juveniles, along with other professional services contracts for the Juvenile Probation Department. The contracts are with 14 different facilities, with prices ranging from $45 to $197 for unsecured facilities and $115 to $260 for secure facilities. Only one facility, Garza County, had an increase in price ranging from $5 to $13 per day. In other actions, the Ward County Indigent Health Care Program was renewed for 2022, with an effective date of September 1st was approved. There were no changes from the previous year. Guidelines include eligible persons must be residents of Ward County, liquid assets cannot exceed $2,000, equity of a vehicle cannot be greater than $4,600, and all applicants must submit to a drug screening by urinary analysis. Jail inmates will be considered medically indigent. Commissioners also issued the order of special election on November 2nd constitutional election. Early voting will be held from October 18th until October 29th in the Ward County Clerk's Office, located at 400 South Allen Street. Election day of November 2nd will be held at the respective precinct polling locations. A request from Waterbridge Texas Midstream LLC to cross County Road 162 for pipeline purposes was approved. The proposed pipeline will be for two 12-inch pipelines to be bored a minimum of 6 feet beneath the road surface. County Road 162 is located in the northwest part of the county, about 3 miles east of the Pecos River, and about 10 miles northwest of Barstow. Payment of bills totaling $1.3 million was approved. Leading items for county payroll, $375,000, hospital medical insurance, $111,000, and Ward County Appraisal District, $44,000. Several small budget amendments were approved unanimously. Amendments were for the General Fund, Road and Bridge Fund, JP Court Technology, and Precinct 4 Roads. The expenses for the JP Court Technology was increased by $5,000. There was no change to other overall expenses. Personnel changes were also approved. In routine business, county officers' reports and minutes of the August 9th meeting were approved. The next meeting of the county commissioners will be held at 9:30 a.m. on September 13th.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of Far West Texas. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.